Welcome back. We are doing episode 15 of The Work. Today is April 11th, 2011. And I'm Bonnie Gillespie, your host for The Work. Ryan Basham is on location yet again with his awesome producing self, which means we're joined by Carolina Gropa.
I'm back.
We also, of course, have Keith Johnson, our producer and engineer, and Haysayer.
Hey.
And I'm super excited because we have a very special guest in our studio today, Tamika Simpkins.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, now she's
Yay.
Quiet.
Yes, now, that's all right.
It'll come out.
Okay, good. Thank you for joining us. We will do our interview segment momentarily, but we're going to go right into some entertainment industry news with Carolina.
Okay, so on Friday, got together with a friend of mine I hadn't seen since high school, and she just got the job of head of social network department at Telemundo, which is owned by NBC. And so she was out here for a Hispanic conference, which is all about how they can find bloggers and show them how to brand their content and what they're writing. I went to their website, and the first story that comes up is how this film called Girl Walks Into a Bar is a feature-length film, and it's going to be exclusively distributed on YouTube.
So its theatrical release is basically, it's an internet release.
Exactly, on YouTube. And I was like, oh, it's probably going to be, you know, some independent thing, whatever. And I look, and it's got, like, a legit cast. Like, almost everybody on the trailer you recognize, from Rosario Dawson to a bunch of Latin names. And I don't know what the story is about too much, but there's naked people in the trailer, so that's always fun. But I guess it's the beginning of YouTube becoming its own distributor, which is along the lines of what we've been talking about with Netflix. It's just crazy. The reason why I was on this website is because the producer and the director is Sebastian Gutierrez, who's a Latin director. And so that was like the highlight of their conference, is how we can incorporate this into our business. Which brings me right into our next story, which is about Netflix, which we seem to talk quite a bit about.
Weekly at this point.
We should
point.
Be their unofficial spokespeople, for real.
They got a lot of people talking about them. Well, I think that's why they're in our news.
That's right. Yeah. That's true. So, you know, Netflix just acquired the rights to distribute and stream all 7 seasons of Mad Men.
Amazing. You have anything on that?
No.
Okay. You don't have to. You just usually do. Oh, Keith's excited about misogyny in Hollywood.
Oh.
Well, let's get into that.
That's always a fun topic.
Yeah.
Well, here's the thing that we all watched American Idol this week and saw...
With American What?
Yeah. And Pretty Pia got kicked off.
I heard about this.
There is now a statistical track record that the girls, especially the good-looking, talented ones, get booted off relatively early, leaving a field of nothing but guys. One of the things that really bugs me about Hollywood, or the perception of Hollywood, or the perception of the industry, is that it's misogynistic and men are to blame.
Yeah, you're keeping me down.
Yeah. The men write the things, and the men produce the things, and the men
finance
the things.
Yeah.
And the men direct the things, and all of the women are objects of sex or damsels in distress or whatever. And here's what I like to say. It's the little girls and the 50-year-old ladies who are getting crushes on the guys who are kicking these beautiful women out of Hollywood. One of the things that I hate is that storytellers in Hollywood get a bum rap when they tell a story. Who went to go see Jodie Foster's last movie? Who went to go see...
What was Jodie Foster's last movie?
The Brave One.
Oh.
And did women go see that? No.
Of course not.
Do you know why? It's a rare thing for a woman to be able to sell tickets.
We've talked about this before. The Ulmer scale ranking, which looks at bankability in overseas sales and distribution before a frame has been shot. We took a look at the Ulmer scale, and of the top 10 people, there's one female.
Who was it?
Angelina Jolie.
Right.
And that's it. And it's like, even Julia Roberts, Reese Witherspoon, mm-hmm. like people that you would say, oh, sure, they can put people in the butts and seats. Like, you know, Sandra Bullock, people are going to go to see her movies. Nope, not as much as the top 20 men. Like, it's a little crazy.
I want people to stop saying misogyny in Hollywood until they go out and support female-driven pieces.
Mm-hmm.
And Diablo Cody and Ellen Page are the exception that proves the rule.
Mm.
People don't go out to see female-driven stories written and produced by females, directed by females.
It's tough.
And so what I want to say to that is, guys, Hollywood is not misogynistic. The whole world is, mm-hmm. especially the women.
Well, good point here. We've been having a series of meetings for the Live from the Basement sketch comedy thing that I'm EPing, that you're directing. Awesome. We're having a blast. And that you star in, by the way. And you star... Oh, my God. Look at us.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. We so rock.
The cast and crew
look
up in here.
Look at that. Hey. So we... have been having a series of meetings for 4 months for Live from the Basement. And at every one of these meetings, it's me and 7 guys.
Yep.
Sometimes 12 guys.
Sometimes.
And just last week, for the first time, we had another female at the meeting. And I found myself feeling like, back off. These are my boys. I really did. And so when Keith brought up this story, and I was like, I don't know. And then I went, no, it is women who are keeping women out.
But can I just quote, can I just comment on that? Because just last night, I read an article with Reese Witherspoon, was like, I think Allure magazine. And she quoted, like, she basically, the whole article was about women in Hollywood. She said, and I'm going to read this quote, I tweeted it. She said, we're just too hard on each other, and women need to be more supportive of each other and stop tearing each other apart. Mm-hmm. And all that to say that, yes, it's already hard enough. And yes, misogyny exists regardless of what industry you're in, but I think with our industry, if women came together, we're and not, as cheesy as that sounds, if they did, I think it would change things drastically.
I agree,
but it will never happen, you know. And why is that? Because men come together and they create things and they stay closed in their little nest, and right. women can't seem to do that successfully.
You know what, though? There's also different ethnic groups for which this is true, because I remember when we interviewed James Hong, who's a huge Chinese star. Like, he's very, very famous. Has been in everything. His IMDb scrolls 4 days.
Right.
We interviewed him for Acting Cues, and he said, because we talked about racism and specifically how the Asian population has not had an opportunity to rise up in Hollywood. Mm-hmm. And he specifically said, I know it is our fault. He said, look at anybody who is, like, he looked specifically at the Wayans brothers. And then he looked, and he looked at the Cosby Show and mm-hmm. all the people who are involved on these shows that are black shows. He's like, these guys not only came in, but they brought everybody up from their neighborhood with them and put them in the crew, put them in the cast. And then when they got their money, they gave them money to do more projects mm-hmm. and empowered them to create a community of projects together. He said, the Asians won't do that. They're too proper. They're too polite. They're too so gracious for being invited to play at all.
Right.
That they will never say, oh, and by the way, you need to hire my brother. Right. It would never happen.
Right.
And I was fascinated to hear him say that. But I'm thinking, I'm sitting here with an 80-year-old man who certainly has seen this business mm-hmm. as a working actor for over 50 years. Mm-hmm. I need to pay attention to what he's saying. And I think we as women feel that way as well, that we don't do the community and let's bring each other up.
Yeah.
And we should.
I mean, there's like Women in Film and all these all great organizations, which I'm not a part of and I want to be. But I wonder, like, does that really help? And how far does that really get you in our business? Does that, what difference does it really make? I'd be curious to know, you know, to do that. But
yeah, it's definitely an interesting issue.
Interesting.
I just want to say all of that culminates with the statement, it is not my fault.
Honey, you are a white man in his 40s. It is all your fault.
Mm-hmm.
Seriously, you're not going to get any love on that here.
Yeah, I mean, you're with 3 women right now, so you could easily...
Yeah, put on petticoats and high heels, and then we'll talk.
So, Kaka, more news?
Wow. Yeah. more news, just on the topic of dispensable. The Huffington Post and AOL, they became one, they merged, and so this transition has been interesting and rocky because they just announced that some of the writers are going from being full-time staffed employees to getting fired to getting rehired as freelancers so that you don't have to pay all the back-end things that you would have to pay to hire somebody. And this is interesting because if writers in journalism start getting fired, what is going to happen with television writers? Is this the new trend?
It concerns me about writers' rooms in particular because, you know, episodic, hour-long procedurals tend to be written in a more solitary fashion already. Mm-hmm. But I'm thinking about things like the sitcom writer's room, where we're gathered around and there's your team of writers and they're all paid to be there, and they're paid for years to be there. They're on these huge contracts sometimes, and sometimes not even affiliated with specific shows, but to just sit and develop projects and what ifs and whatnot. And the thing that concerns me is if we're seeing this sort of thing happen in journalism, does this now turn into write your sitcom on spec, write your episode of the hot current sitcom without that writer's room? And I that makes me nervous. Or you're a part of the writer's room, but you're hired for an episode,
right,
not for a season.
Right.
This is something that's been going on in the industrial world for a long time.
For sure.
the firing of employees, or, you know, outsourcing, let's call it.
Well, hell, even agents are finding this sort of thing happen. Over the past couple of years with the economy tanking, and especially when it hit Hollywood, there are agents who were told, you will no longer be on salary, you will be on commission only, which made it even more competitive for actors and writers to get agents, because the agents could now only take on people that they knew were going to turn money around, because that's the only way they were getting paid.
Right.
And they used to be on commission plus a salary. And now, more and more, it's just commission. That's terrifying. Or is it?
It's more open.
Open and is an interesting word to use.
So I think what you're going to see with this is there are going to be a lot of freelancers.
But don't you think that it could potentially be good for up-and-coming talent?
It could be a way in, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, especially because they can offer you nothing, but you get the opportunity to be in that writer's room when you're a young, hot, hungry writer.
And the problem that we run into is hungry works cheap.
And then that runs into a problem with ageism, because then folks who are older and want to be more comfortable and want to have their money are going to be pushed out, because there's always going to be someone hungrier, younger, ready to work for cheaper. Yeah. Now, I've got speaking of younger and hungrier, I need to talk about somebody who is known in the industry as a pariah. I mean, the shark. That is his nickname. Nick Roses. And Nick Roses is someone who first popped on my radar when he was 14, 15 years old from Florida, calling and pitching talent as a talent manager with clients in L.A., working from Florida. He was profiled on a show that MTV put on a few years back as being the youngest ever talent manager. And he was trying to get his own reality show. And so they had a bunch of people who were all pitching why they needed their own reality show. There are new shows like this currently on the air. But this was several years back on MTV. And he has been in Los Angeles the past couple years. And apparently he is one of the first ones to be brought up on charges under the new Krikorian Act of 2009, which is AB 1319. Otherwise known as the CD Workshop Law. But let me tell you, people, this is why it is not the CD Workshop Law. This is this guy was charging families $3,000 per kid to come out here and stay with him and go through acting boot camp, with the condition being the actors had to go through this camp to be repped by him for management.
No, to have a chance to be repped by him for management.
He was, of course, also a manager at one of the top management firms out there, and they are trying to distance themselves from him. They fired him immediately once the charges went public last week, or dropped his contract. We'll say that's the Hollywood way to spin that. But, of course, one of the partners at the management firm was someone who was one of the instructors at the boot camp. So I'm not really sure how you're going to spin that. The allegations that are not in the actual charges that have been brought are even scarier. I've talked to some of the parents, and I've talked to some coaches who have been made aware of the types of things that were allegedly going on. And I think if all of this comes to light, which it requires the families to step up and complain, that's the only way this law works. If those do come to light, I think in addition to what he's currently charged with and what he's facing, it could be really huge. Right now, he's facing $70,000 in fines, minimum, and 7 years in prison, just based on the current charges. I think we could see them, and by them, I mean Joe Q Law, make an example out of him.
Mm-hmm. Kind of irks me that he's from Hollywood, Florida, because I'm from Brazil, as some of you listeners might know. And when I moved to the States, I lived in Virginia for a couple of years, but mostly grew up in Pembroke Pines, Florida, which is like 10 minutes away from Hollywood, Florida. And I did some of those workshops and the classes, and like you sign up for them and you pay $2,000, and then, you know, 2 months later they're out of business and you lost your money. And I don't know why, but it seems that for some reason, Southern Florida seems to be like just where this virus start, where these people flock to and where there's an audience for that, where these families are so desperate because they're in a third market where they're like, yeah, I mean, if we do this, then yeah, my kid will have a chance. And I remember sitting in some of those classrooms and some of those things that those people would say.
They specifically target parents of kid actors because they know they can pull on the, well, you don't want to stand in the way of your child's dream, do you? And if your kid, like, look at our school, it's amazing. I know it's expensive, but if your kid got into Harvard, you'd find a way to afford it. And they use those kinds of sales tactics to get you to finance the dream. Yep. And they do target markets like that specifically because they know that you're far enough away from a major market, especially Southern Florida. You're not close enough to Atlanta to go where there's actual work.
Right, right.
And so they really do look at people who are just far enough out of the next size up market that they can get you and not have you close enough to real resources and real classes and real talent agents and managers. Specifically, bizparents.org has been fantastic with troubleshooting this and watching what's going on in other states. Of course, stuff that's going on in other states, this is a California law. AB 1319 is California law. There are other states that are watching with great interest with what happens in California so that they can get laws on the books to fight things like that going on in other states. Mm-hmm. But this happens all over the country. You hear about the kids that are scouted in malls and handed business cards, and the parents are like, oh, you could make so much money in commercials, and you just need to take these thousands of dollars in classes. Mm-hmm. And so it's a little terrifying, but I love that this is starting to come to light, because I think we're going to see a lot of this. I think we're going to see a lot of cockroaches go running.
Exactly.
And it'll hopefully change the way business is done to be a little more ethical. We'll say. So on that, we're done with news. Yes, ma'am?
Yes, ma'am. We are.
Okay. All right. Well, so let's get right into our interview with Tamika Simpkins. Oh. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me here. Absolutely. I love you all.
We love Yay! You. Yay. We
love you. The L word.
She did. She loves
and
us.
And I don't use it often.
Ooh. Wow. So what makes you love us, Tamika? We'll just start with that.
I love your energy about what you're doing, and the thing is, you're creating your own work, and that's the age that we're in now. You can't sit back and wait for someone to come knock on your door and say, hey, I have something going on, you want to be in it? Because it's not going to happen. And we have too many resources nowadays to be sitting around not doing anything when we're all intelligent enough to go out there and tell our own stories and create our own things and live our own dreams. And so I just love how you're always reinventing yourself. You're always doing something new. There are no stops. No is not a word in your vocabulary. And I just admire that.
Well, Diane Warren has a great quote that I love. She just says, be dyslexic when you hear the word no.
I like that.
Don't you like
that?
Because then it's on.
Yeah.
Well, so let's talk about some of the ways that you've created opportunities for yourself. Because I know in the time that we've known each other, I've seen you produce so much. And I want you to talk a little bit about why, as an actor, you've chosen to produce your own work and to get out there and just make things happen.
Oh, wow. That's a very interesting question. I don't get asked that too much. This is my passion. I have so many stories inside of me, and I can't sit here and say that I didn't have moments of fear. I have several times, and I'm like, oh no, I can't do it, it won't be accepted, but I see people out there doing it every day, and so I'm like, there's no reason I can't do it. And it's something about Hollywood, I think, that can be a little intimidating, because I'm from Philadelphia. If I was still there, oh, things would be done with my eyes closed, with no money, done on bologna sandwiches and cereal. there would not be a hesitation in my mind, because that's my city. I know how to make things happen here. This city is a little different. It can be a little intimidating, but then this where it is important who you surround yourself with.
Yeah.
You surround yourself with good people who will hold you accountable, who know what you are capable of, and say, get off the pot. Stop sitting there, sitting in your shit, and get up and do what you're supposed to be doing.
Sitting in your shit. I love it.
I have a teacher, Richard Lawson. Whenever I get in those moments, he's like, so you're sitting in your shit. Does this feel good? You're wiping it all over your face and blah, blah, blah.
I love it.
And I'm like, yeah, and I there are no excuses, because I am capable and intelligent, and I know too many people.
Well, that's one of my, I think, philosophies in life, and particularly in this town, is surround yourself with the best people you know.
Exactly.
Make sure they know each other.
Mm-hmm.
And then just stand back and watch magic happen. Because if you put the right people together, they will create, and they will create amazing shit.
They will.
And so I think that, for me, has been so inspiring to see, like, how many people that when we just put them in front of each other, they'll come up with stuff to create. Because you're right, you cannot walk very far in this town without bumping into people who are ready. Let's do it. Come on. Inspired.
Exactly.
Let's make stuff.
And it's really not about the people. I think Keith is always saying that. It's not about the people you know, but it's the people they know.
That's right.
Every day I am learning that more and more and coming out of myself. And so I have this project that I'm working on, my web series I've been working on
Tell
for
us all
several
about it.
Years. Mm-hmm. It's called Nut City. Everybody laughs. It's like, first thing you think of is porn. Not porn.
No, I don't thing of
that's
porn.
Not what I thought.
I get
a lot of bunch of people like nuts like running around.
Yeah,
that's what it is. It really is. But it's also a play on the fictional town that I've created called Walnut City.
Oh, cool.
But everybody in the town is cuckoo, mm-hmm. and they're nuts. So a little bit Nut City. But all the men like, oh, you're doing porn now. No porn. There is sex and money. And hotness going on in there, because that's what sells.
Well, because, of course, you're involved in this hotness.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. I like that. So I've written a full series of it. I've written 28 episodes
wow.
of
Hell
the
yeah.
first season, and I already yes. have the second season outlined. I have a few named talent interested. I won't say who just yet, because it's not on paper. It's
I
all
understand.
Verbally.
I understand.
But I've had some readings. I've had great feedback. And so I'm in the process of shooting a sizzle reel for it to Great. Shop around. One of the things that's holding me back is I've written such a, I guess, kind of a big production. And I was like, oh, I need a hotel and I need this place and I need that place. And I would always let that hold me back. One of my accountability friends, we're in an admin group together. She's like, why aren't we shooting this yet? You've been doing research. You've been watching everybody else's web series. You've been doing rewrites for whatever. When are we doing this? And they said, oh, well, I can't get a hotel. I don't have money, blah, blah, blah. Oh, well, I work here. I could probably get you a hotel with the fee waived. What?
That's right.
Yeah.
And it's really all about asking for what you want
mm-hmm.
and not trying to keep it to yourself. And I think that's one of the reasons why we were talking about misogyny
yes.
in Hollywood. I think it's something about women being trained to be the matriarch. And to be strong, and you're supposed to be able to do it all by yourself.
It's self-sufficient.
It's self-sufficient. Yeah. You're not supposed to need a man.
One of my girlfriends last night reached across the table. She's a casting director, reached across the table because I had just said something that clearly made her aware I was not in a good way. And she just took my hand and she said, how can I help you?
Mm-hmm.
And I went, I don't even know how to answer that
exactly.
question, because it's not in my hardwiring to have an answer for how you can help
exactly.
me.
Exactly.
Because mm-hmm. I'm all about looking for how can I help you? How can
right.
I help you? How can I help you?
Right.
I think that is something in our
It is something, because I can never answer mm-hmm. that question either. I'm like, well, you're just you being a friend, that's great. And it's like, you still got a 50 million kabillion things to do. If you're like, oh, can you just like make me a sandwich or something, that'll help a lot. But we don't do that.
We don't.
I think it's Mm-mm. the women makeup that we're supposed to be strong, especially because it's a man's world.
Mm.
We're supposed to be strong, and we already have enough uphill battles, so
yes, sister.
We have to do it on our
Preach
own
it.
And no, we really need to stick together.
Yeah.
I mean, if the women, because there are more women than men in this world, if we were to combine our superhero strength, we could take over.
Yeah.
There's power.
I agree. I agree. So let's talk about how you have channeled some of your power. Tell me what it is that excites you about Nut City in particular, and about being a producer and being a creative outside of the actor brain.
This is my story, and I've done so much research on all these web series, what try to make them successful. The thing that I constantly remind myself, and I always have people who hold me accountable that remind me, I'm like, oh, I can't do my story. It's been done. They just came out with a story, blah, blah, blah. So there's something different about your story. One, it's your story.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'll just give out a little bit of part of the story. It's a whodunit. I call it a sexy urban whodunit. And the tagline is, two people shot, one shooter, and everybody in the town is a victim or a suspect. And the thing is, in whodunits, you always know who the victim is. And the thing is finding out who the shooter was. But in my story, everybody could have been shot. Everybody could have been a shooter. So I've set it up that way where you don't know who was shot. You don't know. And it kind of plays in a flashback. It starts off with the shooting in kind of a blurry focus. And then the rest of the season plays 1 month up until the shooting. So you find out about the relationships, and everybody has motives, and everybody's sleeping with someone else. It's almost like a soap opera coincided with Arrested Development.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause you know, everybody has these crazy characters, but it's kind of like soap opera drama, like people, there's something wrong with them.
Right.
So, and I've had a couple readings. I've had a few people like, I want to play this part. Please don't give that part to anyone else. And that makes me feel good.
That's nice.
So it's very exciting. It's the first thing I've ever written by myself. I've always had co-writers or co-collaborators, so it's almost like a baby I've given birth to, and I really want to protect it.
There comes that woman thing again.
Yes, comes that woman thing. But I'm really excited about it. The more people read it and they love it and they laugh and they're like, oh my gosh, I can relate to this character. And I just have these visions on it. It's like so clear. It's the universe saying, can you please do this? I'm tired of sending you hints to do this. This is what I have you here to do, and you are blocking it.
So, well, one of the things we were talking about before we started rolling tape on this episode was about how just I was having one of those days where it's like I said to Keith, 50-50 chance. I'm either going to go show up at my speaking engagement this morning or I'm just going to drive somewhere and it's been fun.
Yes.
Good 10 years, hon. But then I'll just, you won't be able to find me. I'll go off the grid.
New life.
And so Tamika and I were talking about this and she's like, what would you do? I said, I pictured myself on a farm somewhere or maybe a vineyard and just being like showing up and saying, hey, you need some work? And I'm like, I don't know why I see myself on a farm. Like, can I just pick some things?
Picking,
she's like, what are you going to pick? I'm like, I don't know. I really don't know. But it's like, I just was having one of those I need to get off the grid kind of days.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so we were talking about how we all have that. Like, it just does happen. Yes. That as a part of being a creative in this industry, we do have those moments of just, I got to get out of here. How do we survive those moments? One of your favorite quotes, I know for a fact, because I've heard you use it many times. I want you to share it with our listeners and explain what that means to you.
Well, it's a quote that my aunt always would say to me, and it's never give up 5 minutes before the miracle, because the miracle is always around a corner. So don't stop walking your path. Keep going, because the miracle is there. And you notice how when we have down times or we're in the valley and we're just like, oh my God, I'm not going to live through this. And then like a month later, you're laughing at it and you're on the other side. And so I always think about that. This is just temporary because the miracle is right there. Mm-hmm. I might not be able to see it visually, but I know it's right there. I know this mindset I'm in right now is temporary because there are bigger things. I'm here for a reason. That's right. I would not still be here. I would not have come here. I would not have made it here. I would not have met all these people. All these things happen for a purpose. Everything that you're doing right now, you may not be able to see why it's happening. It will come to fruition. Changing my mindset and saying, this is for a reason. I'm having a weird moment right now. That's temporary.
It's a moment.
It's a moment. It's temporary. It's going to pass. I may have $5. I'm going to have 20 in a couple of days.
That's right.
So my $5, we cool.
And it's great when you can look back and connect the dots and be like, wow, like if that crappy experience had not happened, I would not have met this person that took me to this place and where I learned this. And now I can do this because I know all of this.
Exactly.
You know, as cheesy as that sounds.
No.
And I'm always fascinated by that.
I love it. Some people do think it's cheesy. I totally believe in it. I totally believe in vision boards. I have 2 vision boards and I framed them and they're all pretty and they sit in my bedroom and I just look at them every day. And sometimes I look and I'm like, wow, that happened and that happened. And I can't explain how it happened, but I envisioned it.
But it's not about how.
Right.
That's
it's not
my,
about
that's
how.
That's one of my favorite quotes. It's not about how. Keith and I'll be driving around and I'm like, how are we gonna? It's not about how. We're gonna. Mm-hmm. It's not about how. We're gonna.
Exactly.
And for me, the tip I want to give on that vision board, because I've done a sort of different version of that, is I have a folder in my computer of intention photos. Every time my screensaver wants to come up, I have a slideshow of all my intention photos.
Yes.
And that's my vision board.
Yes.
And sometimes I'll go through it and go like you, that happened.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just to keep those images in front of you and stay inspired.
It is. It is.
So what are your tips for staying inspired?
Again, surrounding yourself with positive people.
How do you find them? How do you plug in with your people? Like for somebody who's like new to LA or maybe feels like my crowd's not doing it for me, how do you connect?
Well, I say first, if you're following your path, doing the things that will drive you to your dreams and your passion, then you'll find people hopefully that are sharing the same passion, the same drive. I say you could start there and you will meet people and you will learn along the way. Oh, I'm gelling with this person. I like to work with this person. And I don't know. That's what it's funny how many people I know. I look at I don't know as many people as you do. But I think it's just, again, doing what you're supposed to do, doing what's in your heart and not what other people tell you to be, because some things work for some people, some things may not work for you. Mm-hmm. So I say, do things that are going to fulfill your goal, that are going to feed your passion and your dream. Then hopefully you will meet those other people that have the same drive. They may have the same dream, they may not, but you will be walking a path together, and hopefully you'll make friends. You'll have kind of a family out here. I consider you all like my family.
Absolutely, of course.
So it's not as bad when you feel like you have family here, especially when you're not from here.
Well, Tamika and I are actually family, and this is true because when you turn on my Wii, you will see, and Carolina as well, everybody at this table has a me on my Wii. That's how close we are. That's when you know your family, is when you made it to the me the characters on the Wii.
Many evenings I will wake up at 3 a.m. and drunken Wii will be going on in my
life. I don't know what you're talking about. Yeah. The way I heard that story.
I'm a Vanilla Hooper. Regardless, I don't care what y'all say.
Well, Tamika, thank you so much for joining us on The Work. I really appreciate
having you here.
I'm so
excited for you all. Another new venture.
Because that's what we need, more
ventures. Yeah. As if you don't have enough.
We need more shit to do. I know.
It boggles my mind every time I see something new on Facebook. I'm like, what? How is she doing all of the Lord?
I think we may have just about reached my tolerance level when I start fantasizing about going to a farm.
Right?
I think we may have decided. I think we're going to hold for a minute.
I feel like people like us, we don't really take into account like how much we are doing at all times. We're always like, more, I can do more. Because when I tell my family back in Florida, I'm like, yeah, you know, I'm doing this and I'm doing that. And it's not really happening here, but it's happening here. And I got this and that. And they're like, holy crap. Like, when do you sleep? Like, when do you relax? I'm like, I'm not really doing all that much. They're like, yeah, you are. And it's like,
yeah,
I am.
Yeah.
You know, like when other people
it's really
show you that
the
perspective.
Outside mm-hmm. looking in, because you're like, wait, I should be doing something right now.
Yeah, Saturday.
I'm driving
I was
in
like,
my car. I'm supposed to be
do.
Doing something while I'm driving in my car.
You know?
And everybody's like, wow, you're doing a lot. That's really great. You know, people back home, they think you're like a superstar. I'm like, I ain't doing nothing.
But, right. But I think that's important to have that perspective, that it's not just here where you're feeling like got to be full-time hustler, to use Carolina's line.
That's my line.
That's right. Not only do you have to do that, but you also have to understand that when you go back and see how others see you, mm-hmm. especially civilians, people outside the industry.
Right.
You know,
normal folk.
Normal people. They take a look and they're just like, wow. And you go, oh, hang on. I need to remember that perspective. Mm-hmm. I'm actually doing a shit ton. And I need to honor that, because we forget. Yeah. It's not about how much we're accomplishing. It's not about results. It's about progress. Always working.
Yes.
Connecting with people.
Perseverance.
That's right. Not giving up 5 minutes before the miracle. I love it. Thank you, Tamika.
Appreciate
you being here. We have some not really news, Miss Carolina.
Yes, we do. I don't know how many of you guys tuned in for SNL this weekend. I did. And Helen Mirren was the host, and she was fantastic. I just love her personally, like on a whole different level. But she just has an incredible sense of humor. And to look at this woman, you know, she won an Oscar. And who did that role, and we probably perceive her as such a serious aristocratic kind of woman. She was just balls out hilarious, making fun of herself. And she had this skit where, you know, like, I think it was Kristen Wiig, they come in and they touch her breast, and they're just holding her breast, and they have this miraculous experience touching her breast, and just ridiculous, you know. And then also her having like a lesbian kiss, the Roosevelts.
I don't know.
Well, they had this basically the skit about the Roosevelts.
Eleanor Roosevelt is a lesbian.
And Eleanor Roosevelt plays a lesbian in it.
Get
and
yours.
She played her. And so it was basically about Helen Mirren making out with another chick who's like, you know, young enough to be her granddaughter. Which was awesome.
Double get it. I have to say, Helen Mirren is like the new Betty White.
Yeah.
Like, she's really killing it right now.
Her
Funny or Die video with Billy Crystal,
so
which is
good.
The reimagining of When Harry Met Sally.
When Harry Met Sally 2.
Yes. Right. I'm not going to spoil it by giving you any of the taglines or any of the jokes. You just need to go over to Funny or Die, pop in the words Helen and Mirren.
Brilliant.
And just crack your ass up. It's hilarious.
So brilliant.
So the not really news is Helen Mirren. Awesome.
She's just awesome.
Yeah.
It's not really news.
That's not really news.
Everybody knew.
But that's good.
But it's official.
I love it.
Yeah.
All right. Yep. And it's official. We are done with episode 15 of The Work. Thank you for joining us at iTunes. Please rate, subscribe, review. We love all those fun things. And also you can join us over at podcastingthework.com. Leave comments there. You can tweet us at @the_work. Damn, we're everywhere. So on behalf of Ryan Basham, who will be back with us next week. Bye, Ryan. Yeah. And of course, Carolina Gropa.
Thank y'all once again.
Keith Johnson, our engineer, producer, and haysayer.
Hey.
And the lovely Tamika Simpkins.
Thank you. Never give up 5 minutes before the miracle, y'all.
I'm Bonnie Gillespie saying thank you for joining us. Until next time, keep creating.